From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Running a federal election is an enormous operation, becoming ever more complex. The Australian Electoral Commission doesn't get a lot of publicity, but it's a jewel in the crown of our democracy. Its integrity at the heart of public trust in our voting system. As AEC Commissioner Tom Rogers, who left the job just a few months ago, oversaw three federal elections. Now Rogers is a member of the advisory board of the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance and is an advisor on election management globally. He joins us today. Tom Rogers, during your time as AEC Commissioner, you oversaw three elections. Now, you won't be doing that this time, but tell us about running an election in the modern age. What is required, especially with the trend towards early voting?
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. The administration of democracy has changed fundamentally over the last 10 years in particular, probably 15 years. And running, I've often said that running an election in Australia, really, it's the largest peacetime logistic exercise in the life of Australia, probably of any democracy, really, because it's so complex administratively to run these events. I've often said in the past, it's a bit like setting up a Fortune 500 company in 4 weeks, running it, then dismantling it a couple of weeks after the event. It is just phenomenally complex. And the amazing thing is that because we've got good systems in place, it works pretty well. But it really is all hands to the pump. You just imagine how complex that is.
Over the years, there must have been some bad experiences. What do you remember as being the worst?
Obviously, I took over the commission at a time of great turmoil. We had an issue, you might remember, Michelle, in Western Australia, where we had misplaced some votes during a recount. And that caused the rerun of the Western Australian Senate election. That was a very, very difficult time for us. But there were other times as well. Running the COVID election, I think, was probably the most complex thing we've done. It really was hard. And making sure that our staff and citizens were safe, still running the event, still focusing on ensuring a trusted outcome. That was possibly the thing I remember most of all. And in fact, even as we're talking about it, Michelle, my blood pressure is rising as I have that recollections.
So how many people are involved in running an election? And of course, a lot of these would be just short-term contract people, right? Not permanent staff.
Mm. Absolutely. It's a really complex thing. The agency goes from, you know, I'll use very rough figures here, Michelle, about 1,000 people all over Australia during the non-electoral period up to, you know, about 105,000 people during that very short period. And as you've just said, some of those are there just for the day. Some of them are there for a couple of weeks. And for some of them that are there just for the day, it may well be the only time that they've actually done that. It may be the only time they do it. So we've got to make sure, the AEC has to make sure that people are trained, selected the right way and confident in delivering those services. It's hugely complex. It's amazing that it works so well.
Well, you would think that a million things could go wrong. You could get people who sort of infiltrate the system for bad reasons, right?
Look, a million things can go wrong. And I just, for the record, it's important for me to say that there's no election globally that's ever perfect. People have this expectation that elections are perfect, and if there's one error, it means that there's some sort of significant problem with the election. As you've just pointed out, Michelle, 105,000 people, you know, over 7,000 polling places, voting in close to 100 overseas missions, early voting in remote communities by car, plane, boat and helicopter, printing of something, you know, approaching 60 million ballot papers. There's no such thing as a perfect election, but what the AEC and other agencies like the AEC does is try to minimise the chance of those errors, any errors having an impact on the outcome. But it's hugely complex.
How will this election be different from previous ones?
Now, of course, I'm not speaking as the current commissioner, Michelle, but I'm like all of us, I'm watching the changing global environment. I know that the staff at the AEC will be looking at that in detail and working with their partner agencies within the Commonwealth to make sure that citizens are safe and that the election is delivered in a safe, secure and trusted way. That will be, I think that will be a big difference this time around. Secondly, you know, every week, Michelle, we see more news about developments with AI and, you know, there's that, the issue of disinformation and misinformation. I know those terms have become polarised, but making sure that citizens have access to accurate information to enable them to fulfil their obligation to vote and also to have the chance to vote. So that there'll be things that are, again, different this election that will make it even more complex.
So how is this issue of misinformation, disinformation handled? What sort of processes are in place for that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Michelle, and it's a complex question because whenever we talk about disinformation or misinformation as a society, there are those that immediately react badly to that and think, well, hang on, I've got the right to say, to think and say whatever, you know, I wish to. And that's true. The AEC has been very clear over many years when I was commissioner that we don't censor anybody. People, Australians have the right to believe and say whatever they want to say. But the AEC's role is to make sure that citizens have accurate information when it comes to the electoral process. So if somebody's online saying something that's totally inaccurate, Michelle, let me think of something, you know, like, there's legislation that's been changed so that you don't have to vote or something like that. The AEC will immediately jump in and correct that statement about electoral mis and disinformation, not about political mis and disinformation. That's an entirely separate thing. Maybe we might talk about that a bit later, but the AEC has a role in ensuring that citizens have access to correct information. So they'll, generally speaking, correct the record, and they've got a whole range of ways in which they do that, including very, very active social media presence and a repository of information that's accurate that citizens can access. So a range of different tools.
I mentioned earlier the high level of trust in our electoral system and in the AEC, but was there any damage done to the Commission from the opposition and others raising doubts about it during the Voice referendum?
It's a really difficult question to answer, Michelle, for a whole range of reasons, probably related to what I just said. People are entitled to believe whatever they want to believe. When that issue arose, you know, if you remember, it was about the ticks and crosses. What the AEC did back then and what I did was to put out there information that sought to correct the record and also provide the accurate information. As I forget the figure, Michelle, but that rule about ticks and crosses had been in on the statute books for something like 40 years from memory.
Can you just explain that for our listeners?
It was about the use of ticks and crosses and what would be counted as a valid vote. There were a number of commentators who said that it was unfair that, you know, a cross wouldn't be counted as no, whilst a tick would be counted as a yes vote. And I absolutely understood where people were coming from, but the point the AEC made consistently was this was a legislative issue, not a decision by the AEC. Now, the other thing, Michelle, this is a sensitive area and I'm now speaking as me, obviously, nothing to do with the AEC. It's difficult for the AEC to become involved in a stoush with major players in the political process whilst you're mid-flight, as it were, delivering an event because it can polarise people. So what the AEC sought to do with that, and again, I'm not criticising anybody, including anyone that believed that particular issue, is just correct the record with accurate information, and it seemed to go over pretty well. And the messages that the AEC were spreading were being amplified pretty well by mainstream media. And I actually think the thing blew over pretty quickly. It, for a whole range of reasons, not only did no lasting damage to the AEC, but consistently polls show and research shows that the AEC remains one of Australia's most trusted federal institutions. And so it didn't have an impact. And becoming, you know, one of Australia's most trusted institutions, was something that the AEC during my tenure really focused on. It wasn't just an accident or a fluke. We did a whole range of things to ensure that citizens could trust us. Because as you know, Michelle, trust is the absolute coin of the realm when it comes to elections.
Now, in the dying days of this parliament, the government finally passed those electoral reform changes, which include significant alterations to the regime covering political donations, caps on donations, caps on spending. What are your thoughts about these changes and how much work will these mean for the commission? Because, of course, the minister was saying that they won't come into effect until mid-next term because they do require a lot of logistic work.
It's a huge project. Again, I don't want to speak on behalf of the AEC. Now that legislation was passed after my time, obviously it was mooted before I left, and we did a lot of work looking at the amount of work involved, and it's huge. And this is the thing with elections, Michelle, because the AEC makes it look relatively easy, people think it is easy. You know, it's a deliberate thing. The AEC is operationally very good. It focuses on being operationally excellent. We used to say we had a thing called the Commission's Dilemma, which is the easier the AEC made election administration look, the easier people thought it was, whereas in fact it's the reverse. The AEC are just masters of being able to deliver a complex event. These changes are significant, and as the minister said, many of these won't come in until 2026 because it will take the AEC a significant amount of time. Any legislative change like that, not just for the AEC, but for any election management body, it really does take a comprehensive approach to delivery. If I think back, Michelle, to the changes that were made to the Senate vote and counting system in 2016, that was a huge project, mammoth. We had many, many, many people focused on that. And it really was an amazing thing that we delivered it so quickly. But these things are complex. And I know that the AEC will be working through that at the moment.
There's been some sharp criticism from minor players and parties that this new law will help lock out new and small players from challenging the major parties. Do you think that will happen?
Look, I'm aware of the many criticisms that have been levelled here, and I know you'll understand, Michelle, when I tell you, I don't want to get involved in a stoush between, you know, players in the party. Parliament's passed the legislation, and, you know, I used to say whatever Parliament says, the AEC will do. Many, just out of interest, though, and very relevant to this, many years ago, the AEC made the point to Parliament that there's about 1,000 different ways that the funding and disclosure scheme can be operated, but it is a political choice for how that works. And what we did is provide Parliament with a mnemonic called TECT, and the words that make up TECT are transparency, enforceability, clarity and timeliness. And we said they're the sort of best practice principles which seem to bind these good systems globally, but it's up to Parliament to self-assess against that mnemonic to see what they think. And I'm aware of the criticisms, but I also know that the measures that have been put in place do increase transparency as well, and that's got to be a good thing when transparency is increased.
One reform which didn't proceed was the Truth in Advertising legislation, because there wasn't support for that. When you were commissioner and the present acting commissioner, both of you have opposed the AEC having to be the referee if there was such a regime imposed. Why is that? What is the problem that you see here?
You're absolutely right, Michelle. I was a firm believer that that would be very inappropriate for the AEC. It's one of those rare things where we were very, very proactive in talking to people about that. And one of the reasons is because I think it would ruin the AEC's reputation for neutrality. It's as simple as that. People think what they'll do is they'll give this to the AEC, and the AEC's high level of trust with the community will act as some sort of guarantee of transparency and correctness. And I think the reverse will happen. The moment that the AEC has to opine on whether a statement from a political party or candidate about a political issue is accurate or not, the reverse will happen. It will impact on the AEC's level of trust with the community. And as we said before, given trust is so important that people trust electoral outcomes, I think it's incredibly dangerous. Now, just to be very clear, Michelle, I don't have an opinion on whether someone else should do it, this issue of making pronouncements on the accuracy of statements. I personally think there's a lot of problems with that, but it shouldn't be the AEC. You and I have just spoken about the importance of trust, how we've managed to build it through a whole series of steps to get it to the level that it is. So we've seen Australians accept electoral outcomes in ways that other countries have struggled with. It would be a real shame to lose that with that focus on what's colloquially called truth in advertising.
Which brings us to the wider question of misinformation. Now, you've spoken about how the Commission counters misinformation about an actual election processes or whatever, but how do voters protect themselves in the current context against wider misinformation? Do you have any magic answer on this?
I don't. Sadly, Michelle, I don't think anyone has a magic answer, but I have a view. Do you mind if I just focus for a moment on what the AEC is already doing in this space? Because I think it's relevant, but then I'll tell you what I think's missing. And I think we can rectify it as a society. But years ago, when I was commissioner, I realised this was a significant issue. And effectively, we launched a thing called the Reputation Management System. And it was designed to manage the reputation of Australia's elections, again, to build that level of trust. And I won't go through all of the things that are in that, but we've established a Defending Democracy Unit. We ran a national campaign called Stop and Consider to get people to think about the source of information. By the way, Michelle, I'd love to claim total credit for that, but I shamelessly copied it from the Swedes, who ran a campaign with the slogan of, if it makes you angry, it's probably fake. And we picked that up with Stop and Consider. The AEC was supported by other Commonwealth agencies through the Electoral Integrity Assurance Task Force. Very, very active social media presence, a disinformation register online. All of these things at the time that the AEC did them were, groundbreaking and have been copied by others. But I think the bit that we can do and that's still missing is we really need a national digital literacy campaign for our citizens. When you correct disinformation about electoral matters, there's a whole body of research that shows that it's kind of effective. What is more effective rather than debunking is pre-bunking. And what is more effective, again, is giving citizens the skills they need to make up their own mind about the accuracy of information. The Stop and Consider campaign, I might be wrong, but is still the only national campaign focused on giving citizens skills. We need to run something like that all the time. I think there's a real need for this in the modern era, and that's what we should be doing.
You're now involved in the democratic cause in a global context. How do you see the outlook for democracy globally? Is the situation getting worse, in fact? Are people turning against the whole democratic ideal?
It's complex, Michelle. In fact, last night I was at a Zoom meeting with International IDEA, and we were discussing the changes that have occurred as a result of the reduction in funding from USAID to global democracy assistance organisations. So it's currently a really complex environment that everyone's working their way through. I think last year was the year of democracy, Michelle. You know, more citizens voted in more elections than ever before in the history of the world. I'm very conscious that just having an election doesn't guarantee democracy. You can have an election and not live in a democracy, but you can't live in a democracy without elections. I personally think that the administration of elections globally is actually getting better, more professional, more accurate, Whether it becomes more trusted, I think, is a complex interplay between that issue of dis and misinformation that we said before. Personally, I'm an optimist. I think that democracy continues to be the best model for citizens to live in. And I know that organisations such as International IDEA are doing their best to facilitate an ongoing focus on that. And I'm hopeful, Michelle. I'm very hopeful.
But do you think that the values that underpin a really well-functioning democracy are eroding the value of tolerance, for example?
Well, look, increased polarisation, you know, certainly becomes an issue, you know, as we discussed earlier. But I, as I said, I'm still an optimist, and I think that as fast as polarisation occurs, and, luckily for us, Australia, I think, is one of the least polarised countries, and I think we can act as an exemplar for others. So I'm positive that there are green shoots everywhere, but what we need to do as a functioning democracy is to share what we've done with others through some of these global networks such as International IDEA and others.
Of course, one reason why our democracy perhaps functions as well as it does is compulsory voting, isn't it?
I'm a big fan of compulsory voting, and polls consistently show that most Australians support compulsory voting. I think, you know, by and large, it hovers at around the 70% mark. I think it smooths out many of the other issues that we've seen in other countries where they don't have compulsory voting, where even simple things, they have to spend a lot of their resources in actually getting citizens out to vote. Forget, you know, getting citizens briefed on the electoral process, just that energy and money spent on getting citizens out to vote. And I think in Australia, where we have so many turn up and such a good turnout, it contributes to that trust rating for the AEC that I said previously.
Just finally, you spoke about the need for education campaign, and I wonder whether you think we also need more education in our schools, because civics education has fallen away quite strongly in recent years. I should add a disclaimer, the conversation's just produced a book on civics, but what do you think about what's being taught to our young people or not taught in our schools?
Michelle, I think it's I know there are probably going to be teachers who listen to this and are throwing things at their phones because everyone wants something in the curriculum, and this will be seen as, you know, another thing, but it's critical. The AEC is already doing good work in this space. You know, up until I left at the end of last year, generally speaking, the AEC was getting about 100,000 kids a year through the Electoral Education Centre in Canberra, which is excellent. They're in the process of digitising much of the material so that could be spread to schools that are unable to visit Canberra. So that's been a key focus, is that education piece for the AEC. I know the current commissioner is very focused on that, which is great. And, you know, I know he'll continue to do a fantastic job with that, as he's doing with other things. But I do think we need to do more. You know, our system is great. I think we should be very proud of our electoral system, and about civics more broadly, about our entire system of government. It's got to help to give citizens information about that.
Tom Rogers, thank you very much for talking with us today at what is the pre-start of our election campaign, and sharing your insights. That's all for today's podcast. Thank you to my producer, Ben Roper. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevear. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.